Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Hooten, Judge Cochran, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, February 6, 2019. Thank you all for making out here in a timely manner, considering the road conditions. Hopefully you didn't have too long of a drive. This morning we have six cases on our calendar. Four are set for oral argument, the first of which is case number A18-1258, Barbara Wise et al. Versus Stonebridge Communities, LLC. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, and then counsel for respondent, you'll have 15 minutes in response. And then for rebuttal, you'll have 5 minutes, if you so choose, after to close out. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Tom Marshall. And together with Heather Tabery, who's at council table, we represent the appellants Barbara and David Wise. We have brought this appeal to hopefully have this court reverse the granting of summary judgment by the trial court, Judge David Higgs, and remand this case for trial. This case involves an interesting issue in the sense that the court below, Judge Higgs, took the defense and decided that in this situation not to look so much at what the plaintiff's claim was, but what the defense consisted of. And in looking that, frankly, he ignored what the plaintiff's claim was really about at
all. So what is plaintiff's claim?
Plaintiff has brought a claim as a tenant of the respondent's place.
How does that make a difference whether it's a tenant or tenant landlord? Or I mean, isn't still the issue whether or not the condition, the hazard, was open and obvious? Isn't that what this case really boils down to?
No, and I'll tell you why, Your Honor.
Why not?
The reason is the court below looked at the case as one of an entrant on property and didn't consider the duties owed by a landlord to its tenant, especially with regards to the maintenance of the common areas, which is what this accident took place.
Right, but even if there is a duty to maintain, isn't that overridden by a hazard that's open and obvious?
Well, I guess that's a question the court will have to answer, because I would say absolutely not.
Why not? And why isn't the White case
in Minnesota 504B-161, there is a duty of a landlord and tenant to maintain the premises and common areas fit for intended purposes. In subdivision 2 of that statute, it says if a landlord would like to make an agreement with his tenant to maintain things, it says no agreement may waive the provisions of subdivision 1 or relieve the landlord of the duty to maintain common areas of his premises.
Well, is that agreement in the record at all?
I'm sorry?
Is that agreement to which you refer, is that in the record at all?
The landlord agreement?
Correct.
The agreement itself is described by David Wise in his declaration.
That's not my question. The question is that agreement in the record for us to be able to
review? The agreement itself is not in the record.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter, because the landlord's duty is non-waivable. It doesn't matter if there's an agreement.
Well, but how can we know what the agreement says, what the terms are of that agreement, if it's not in the record?
The agreement has nothing to do with that. The landlord's duty is outside an agreement. That's what the statute provides.
Right, but
the agreement it's not relevant.
Right, but you're referring to the agreement. That's why I'm asking about
I'm just reading from the text of the statute, Your Honor.
Okay.
What the statute says is whether there's an agreement or not, the landlord's duty is not waivable. It has this duty. And the case law talks about that as well. And there are several cases that discuss it, that for the common areas, and even in the the White case, that was a little kid who fell through the screen at his grandmother's apartment. When the court describes the landlord's duty here, it talks about the exception for common areas, which didn't apply in that case because it happened in the apartment where the kid fell off the screen. Here we're dealing with the front door to the apartment building.
Why does that make a difference?
because that's where the landlord has a duty. Those areas are under the landlord's control, not the tenant's control.
Well, I think though the argument is by the respondent here, and apparently was successful before the district court judge, is that while even if there is a duty to maintain, if there is an issue that's open and obvious, that would be an exception to liability here.
Well,
I think the real issue is that defense of open and obvious, right?
I mean, and I think that's the question is does the open and obvious condition trump the landlord's duty to there? Does it create almost like an assumption of the risk? Because there's a couple cases cited here, Olmanson, for example, and Lewison cited, even the court cited those things. Olmanson was a case where a guy drove a snowmobile into a culvert, a golf course culvert of some sort. Lewis was a one where I think that was a diving accident. A swimming pool guy went down a slide head first. But of course, those aren't tenant cases.
All right. Within the context? I mean, uneven sidewalks are a common phenomenon, especially in this state. Is there any open and obvious defense in a case involving an uneven sidewalk?
We're not talking about walking around the city sidewalk. We're talking about a sidewalk in the defendant's control or the respondent's control, and they have this duty. So the argument would be, if I allow this sidewalk to get so bad that it's horrible, I don't have any duty to do anything with it because it's open and obvious. That takes 504B161 and makes it meaningless. If a landlord can make the premises so bad that people can see how rotten it is, I don't have to take care of it. That's not what the law is intended to do. That's not what's supposed to be going on here.
Well,
Counsel, is there a fact question at all, a disputed issue of fact as to whether the sidewalk, the unevenness in the sidewalk was open and obvious at the time of the fall?
Well, frankly, I think there is, but the bottom line is we have this situation where my client, Ms. Wise, certainly testified she didn't see it. It's cement. It's the same color on this side or that side, where it was sunken on the one side and raised on the other. So I think there's a question of fact whether it's that open and obvious.
So it's not like
a snowmobile question, driving into a culvert.
So the question of fact is how open and obvious it is. Is that what you think is the material issue of material fact then?
Well, I think open and obvious is an issue for comparative fault, Your Honor. They can argue that it's open, that her daughter saw it, her 40-year younger daughter saw it. Apparently it was raised in the sidewalk. There's pictures of it in the record showing it. You look at it from the top, you can't tell the difference. At least I can't, but, you know, that's, issues. But,
issue. In essence, what the issue is here, is this an issue, this open and obvious issue, is that an issue for comparative fault, or is that a legal defense supports the summary judgment ruling?
Well, in the Lewis case, for example, the court remanded that case back to the court on the issue of whether the risk that was appreciated by Mr. Lewis as he slid down the side was one. And then they ultimately decided that was one to go with the jury. I would point the court to two recent decisions, I don't think they're even 2 weeks old. They just happened to see these yesterday as I'm getting ready for this. There were two decisions by our Supreme Court. One is called Henson versus Uptown Drink. It was a bar in Minneapolis, and Mr. Henson was an employee who was off duty but helped escort some drunk out of the place, and they fell on the sidewalk, and he got a head injury and died. And the court said, we're not going to look at his intervening as an action of primary assumption of the risk to bar his claim. We'll let that go on. The other case was one called Soderberg, and I do have the site for that one, because that one, the Henson case doesn't have a Westlaw site yet, I saw, but it was A17-1066, was a Supreme Court file number decided January 23rd this year. The other case is Soderberg versus Anderson. That's 2019, Westlaw 287781. And that case was also decided the same day, January 23rd, and that was a ski accident case up at Spirit Mountain when some snowboarder did a jump and on the kid's hill and hit the ski instructor really bad in the head and whatever. But the court said, we're not going to take the inherent risk in skiing, and we're not going to find these things. We'll make it an issue of comparative fault. But they were indicating intent to back off primary assumption of the risk as a doctrine to bar a claim. And I look at that the same way here. We have Olmanson and Lewis, which are primary assumption of the risk, which are relied upon by the trial court. And our Supreme Court is telling us, just barely 2 weeks ago, to back off on this type of absolute bar of claims. I see it as an issue of comparative fault, if it's anything, in this matter.
You referred to the testimony of Barbara Weiss. Would you agree, though, even the Lewis case talks about the fact that when we view the evidence, we view the open and obviousness issue under an objective standard, not a subjective standard, what the individual thought or saw?
Well, you have to look at it. I would agree. Yes, you look at it as a reasonable person standard. But there's certainly a subjective component. I mean, in the sense of the witness, did you see it? Well, no. But are you looking at it through the go ahead. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Oh, but isn't it a reasonable person under the circumstances?
Yeah, well, that'd be the negligence duty of care, yes.
Counsel, the district court in the discussion of the background notes that there was a black mat, floor mat covering the uneven sidewalk. Does that affect the analysis as to whether there's a genuine issue of material fact here?
Well, I would think it would certainly go to the issue of whether it's open and obvious if the crack in the sidewalk or the raise is covered with a mat or has a mat on the edge of it that masks it. I think that certainly creates an issue of fact for any reasonable person that was going on it. Yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, the issues here are such where there's no doubt that she tripped over this raised area in the sidewalk. There's a picture of the raised area. It shows it's about an inch. We know the defendant or the respondent knew about it because a month before, just like, you know, I think September 23rd, this happened on August 20th or October 20th, they have a place hired to come out there to remove the trip hazards, to raise this cement up, to fix this problem. It's not like it was a surprise that this just happened out of the blue. It's been there in their maintenance guy, but it's been monitoring since it was a quarter of an inch because under their understanding of how St. Paul ordinances are, this is an ordinance violation problem. That's what Mr. Davis testified to, as well as Mr. Daubier, the concierge in the place. So, at the time that they moved for summary judgment, we moved to amend the complaint because we thought it was pretty obvious that this was clear that we have a code violation and everything else, that we are looking at negligence per se as well as punitive damages. Of course, the court didn't address those issues.
So going to back to the obvious and open question, how do you get around the fact that you've got three witnesses that testify that the raised concrete was in fact open and obvious, including the daughter and the husband and then the person from the
residence? Well, they never actually testified it was open and obvious. That's a conclusion raised from their testimony, the way it was argued by the respondent.
Well, they did testify that you could see it. I mean, they may not have used that legal term, but I think we as lawyers understand that that's essentially what they're testifying to.
Right. So we have the daughter who testified to that, that she saw it. We have Ms. Wise said she didn't see it. As a matter of fact, she testified that most of the time they don't even use that entrance and would not have an opportunity to have gone through there. The same as Mr. Wise testified. And, of course, the circumstances of the questioning doesn't show the context in the record when he's questioned about the thing, because he's the one who took a picture with his glasses case showing the raise in it.
Does the record show where that black mat was at the time of the fall? I mean, is there anything in the record as to the significance of the black mat?
Yes, it's shown that it was right in that area, right there. Actually, there's a photo of it back on September 23rd when the sandjacking company came out there to look at it. And that's a part of their estimate in the records and showing it right in the spot. So, okay. Yes, there's then Mr. Dobier testified that it was there that day.
Did the black mat in some way camouflage the rise? Is there any evidence that it was over? In fact, I'm looking at this, the findings of the court, which he said Jack Dobier testified in his deposition that after Barbara Weiss fell, he saw a black mat over a raised portion of the sidewalk.
Well, that would be what Mr. Dobier said. I mean, that's certainly a fact showing it's right over the area. The mat was under Ms. Wise when she went over, tripped over the raised area. I think the paramedics removed the mat to the side, so it was in the area after.
Is there anything in the record that indicates that when Mrs. Wise's husband and daughter saw it, the black mat was there?
Mr. Wise saw the black mat to the side. He was not there when the accident happened. But, yeah, Ms. Wise was laying on the mat.
All right, but had they seen it before, the black mat there?
No.
Before.
There isn't any evidence of that from the Wises. Mr. Dobier said it was there earlier, and the photo shows it being there a month before.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes.
Right, my time's up, I see.
Yes.
Thank you.
Counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nick Clare. The last name is spelled K-L-E-H-R on behalf of Stonebridge Communities, LLC. I want to begin with, I think that Judge Reyes and Judge Hooten had made a comment of, isn't this about a legal determination of open and obvious? And I do believe that is the case. What the plaintiffs have set forth, or the appellants, I'm sorry, have set forth in their brief is a new duty. They call it an unwaivable duty. Basically, they're requesting strict liability under the statute. And if the court would take a look at, in this case, it's the Meyer versus Parkin decision that had been cited. And actually, it's pages 438 and page 439. In essence, it's the same statute that was discussed. It's just under a different number. And it discusses the covenant of habitability and the requirement to safely or responsibly. Go ahead, Judge.
I just want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing here, because we have basically two claims, right? We have one, the failure to do the maintenance, right? And then we have another claim, there was a failure to warn about this unsafe condition, correct?
Yes, and the failure to maintain. Go ahead, Judge.
Okay, and I just want to follow up. The open and obvious, doesn't that only pertain to the duty to warn?
It goes to the duty to warn of the maintenance of the property, just like a landowner. In this case, Judge Hooten.
Actually, that's not what the order says, though.
Well, the...
It all deals with that open and obvious with regard to the duty to warn.
Yes, and I don't disagree with you there. And
I mean, because then we really are talking about a legal issue with reference to the duty to warn,
correct? You are correct, Judge. And I think that the district court wove in the landowner and landlord duty that we're talking about with open and obvious, and it's intertwined with the maintenance of the property.
But the judge doesn't deal with that.
No.
The judge never deals with that. And let me ask you, because when you're talking about whether it's open and obvious with regard to the duty to maintain, doesn't that, in fact, get into comparative fault
no,
then?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. And the point I was getting to is the statute that they cite, the Meyer case goes through that same statute. And even in the Meyer case under page 438, it says, hey, there's another provision here that says it requires the lessor or the landlord to maintain the premises in compliance with the applicable health and safety laws of the state and local units. But what the court determined is, and following some other district courts from different states, it says basically, like the New York Supreme Court indicated, that to extend, that the statute was not intended to extend the principle of strict liability to landlords with regards to the wrongs that traditionally have been in the area of tort liability. So then we go to, is there a duty? And I agree, Judge Hooten. And I think there is a duty of my client. And the duty is, generally, a landlord didn't owe a duty to their tenants. And then there were some exceptions that were carved out. And one of the exceptions was, if you maintain control of that premises, you have a duty. And there's no doubt about that. But that duty is the reasonable care standard, which is the negligence standard, which basically is the landlord standard.
But again, I mean, if I could follow through, because the judge here only deals with the duty to warn. If we're just talking about the duty of maintenance, whether or not that slip and fall was due to her own fault by not paying attention, maybe the circumstances of where it occurred would come into play. I mean, doesn't that create a fact issue that only a jury could resolve?
No, and the
in follow up, you can answer the question, but in follow up, can you show me one case where the court has granted summary judgment on a duty to maintain? On the basis that duty to maintain had an exception for an open and obvious defect.
Yeah, and I think that the district court cites the White versus Many Rivers matter, which is 797 Northwest 2nd, 739. And under page 745, now this talks about a hidden dangerous condition, which is even much worse than an open and obvious condition. But basically what the district court or what the Court of Appeals indicated in White, and I'll read it here, is that, and they were citing the Oakland case, which I think goes to this issue, but it says no warning is required even for the tenant when the tenant knows of the dangerous condition or the condition is so open and obvious that the tenant can be expected to have discovered it on her own.
Okay, again, though, we're talking about the duty to warn.
Correct.
Which means it, which is a legal issue.
It is.
At what point does a landlord have that duty? But we have two claims here. One is the duty to maintain, which is a different duty.
Correct.
And can you show me any case where the duty to maintain is subject to an exception for any defect caused by their fault and failure to maintain, that there's an exception for an open and obvious defect or
I have one
problem
off the top of my head, Judge. I know that they're out there. And the White decision talks about what the duty is. And
for the duty to warn, right?
No, it's the duty to maintain. And the court in that case talks about, and if you look at page 744 and 745, it says that many rivers retain control over the repair and maintenance of the window screens and that issue. But the court talks about if the exception is the common law exception, which was carved out, for common law areas like stairs, halls, elevators, yard space, which we have here, that you have to maintain it in a reasonably safe condition. That duty is there. There's no doubt about that. But that duty, just like a landlord, the landlord's duty is the same, Your Honor. A landlord has to keep their premises in reasonable repair. But the legal portion, It takes care of both issues. If a condition is open and obvious, it does relieve the landowner or the landlord of the duty to warn of that unreasonably safe condition that's there.
Well, let me ask you this then.
Sure.
All right, because and he brought up the primary assumption of the risk cases that just came down from our Minnesota Supreme Court. Obviously, skiing, it's open and obvious when you ski that that you could possibly be hit by somebody, and there could be collisions. The court rejected the primary assumption of the risk in the skiing situation and said that's a question for the jury.
And I think
and so why would we have a different way of handling this case when I mean, here we're talking about maybe a quarter of an inch, half an inch, probably a mat over it. Why would we have a different standard for this case than we would for something that is clearly open and obvious, such as skiing?
Well, and I don't know the exact facts of that case, Judge. I haven't read it, and I apologize. But an open and obvious for skiing becomes a little bit different, that there is an inherent risk. But you also have the right to assume another person's good conduct and that they can ski on a hill. But in a situation such as if you see a ski jump, and you know that's inherently dangerous, but if you make a determination to ski under that ski jump where people are jumping off, that's an assumption of the risk type of a case, and that's open and obvious. I think that there's gradations.
Right. Well, I'm just telling you, the Supreme Court said they did not apply primary assumption of the risk and said this simply is a matter that goes to the jury.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, Judge. I think we're looking at a property owner or a landlord owner situation rather than skiing. I don't think that walking is an inherently dangerous risk, but walking over concrete that's not level that you can see, which we do on an everyday basis, on an objective standard.
But let's go back to the question of the mat and whether that creates a material issue of fact, assuming we agree with your legal argument.
Well, and I think that's a good point, Judge Cochran, and I had that written down, I did want to address it. The facts are that the mat was in the area, but that the mat only covered a portion of the raised concrete, and that there was still visible raised concrete in the area that Ms. Wise was walking. And the district court places that in its order.
Where exactly in the order are you looking at? Because in the order that on page, in the background section and on page ADD002, at the end of the second paragraph, it says there was a black floor mat covering the uneven sidewalk. And I don't see the discussion of it covering part of the sidewalk and the rest of it being open and obvious.
Yeah, and it's on page, I guess it would be addendum 5, page 5, I believe. The district court discusses there is no issue as to material fact as to whether or not the uneven sidewalk was visible.
And then right, but the judge there is talking about Kimberly testifying, observing it before the incident. Again, David Weiss before the incident. And then Jack Dobier testified that after Barbara Weiss fell, he saw a mat over a raised portion of the sidewalk.
Correct. And I think the issue was that the mat was partially covering some, and there was still an open, uneven area. And,
so where in the record is that? Because
well,
it doesn't...
That is in...
Is that an...
In the briefs that we had provided to the district court, yes.
Is that an undisputed issue of fact?
Yes, and the undisputed...
And where... So then where in the record would I find that?
That would be within the deposition transcripts that are here. And if I may, Judge, because my time is running short, on the issue of the mat... nobody has testified as to when that mat was placed in this location. Everyone knows, or it was undisputed, that the mat was on the front door area. This is away from the front door. And there was testimony in the record that people had seen that mat before, which was up closer to the door. But there's no evidence in the record of when that mat got to the area that either entirely, which I don't think
but
it
I think
did,
the
or partially.
Question for purposes of whether it was open and obvious is whether it was open and obvious at the time of the fall. So whether it was placed there a week before or not, I think the critical question is whether it was open and obvious at the time of the fall. But I can we move on, because your time is short? I have one other question for
sure.
You. So in your view, then, under the law, does the open and obvious exception negate the landlord's duty to keep the premises in reasonable repair under Section 504B.161?
They have that duty, but in a situation where an individual is injured because of an open and obvious condition, that duty, there is no legal liability for that duty. That's the issue.
Is there an independent purpose for 504B? Then?
Yes. If you take a look at the Meyer-Vera-Parkin matter, it goes through, my time's running short, but it goes through the rent purposes of that, where a landlord may not do a repair and hold off for rent. And basically what the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals was indicating in that case is it goes to rent purposes. And it even goes as far as to say it does extend the duties of a landlord, but it does not extend the duty beyond, for strict liability, you still have to follow the duty of reasonableness and the legal determination of open and obvious. I see my time is up. Sure.
You know, if let's talk about the duty to warn and the open and obvious exception.
Sure.
If there's a material issue of fact as to whether something is open and obvious, would that be something that would be presented to the jury with a case in chief?
I think that's always the case, but the district court and the record here does not find that material fact.
All right, and I just want to follow up because I don't get a chance to ask you any more questions.
Fair
but
enough.
I'm looking at your brief, and one thing that you point out in your deposition testimony is that Mrs. Wise said the mat was not close to the door. In fact, it was covering a lot of lips in the concrete. And then that's on page 5 of your brief. And then it says, on the day she tripped, the mat was not up against the door is like usual. And that's from her daughter. And that the mat was actually, covering some of these lips in the sidewalk.
Correct.
So with those, does this placement of that mat create a factual issue with regard to whether this was open and obvious on the day that Mrs. Wise fell?
And I think that's an excellent question, and I was going to respond to Judge Cochran on that, but my time was running short. This was discussed with the district court, and it's in the transcript. The district court never got to the mat issue because he found, with the evidence there, that it was open and obvious based on the evidence. But we still have, and I had argued that even if this mat was covering the lip, then we go to constructive notice. My client still has to have some constructive notice that there is a piece of mat or some type of material covering an open and obvious condition to now make it a hidden danger. And that mat could have been slid there 3 minutes before, and my client doesn't have constructive
notice.
Well, but
that goes to the issue of whether they're at fault, that they're negligent, right? I mean, we're talking about two different things.
Right.
The issue here before us is whether there is a material issue of fact that makes the summary judgment in this case inappropriate.
That is correct, and there is no evidence by any of the witnesses or Miss Weiss that she tripped on a hidden danger. The testimony is she tripped near a mat on an uneven portion of the concrete that was visible. That's the evidence, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, may it please the Court. I would, responding to Judge Hooten's questions, you're right, open and obvious does go more to the duty to warn, and I see this reference to this White case, and I wanted to certainly share this with you from the decision. The Court, and this is at page 744, says that there are several exceptions to the common law duty of landlords owing no duty of care to their tenants by defective conditions on the premises, and those exceptions are, one, the landlord has willingly taken to repair the premises and done so negligently. Two, retains control of certain areas of the premises. And three, is aware of a hidden hazard. Hidden hazard is a separate duty. We are dealing with number two, the control of where the landlord retains control of certain hazards on certain areas of the premises. White didn't deal with areas where the landlord had retained control because this happened in the apartment. The exception is also described in the Grzegorz case, which I just had. There it is.
Is the hidden, going to the White case, though, I mean, it does talk about the not only the duty to warn, but the duty to maintain. I mean, on 745, it talks about how if a property contains hidden dangers that the landlord knows about and the tenant does not, the landlord must warn. Inherent in that sense is the fact that they have a duty to maintain. So while I agree that the district court didn't discuss explicitly the duty to maintain, it's inherent that in order to maintain, in order to warn, you have to, the tenant has to know about it in order to be able to warn about it, and it has to maintain it, right?
No, you're not understanding my point. My point is that within the apartment. This is a common area. The landlord, under our statute, says they can't waive that.
No, counsel, I understand your argument about the unwaivable, which I respectfully disagree with, because I think the case law, including the White case, does say that even if you have a duty to maintain and a duty to warn, those duties can be overcome. I think that's what the White case is saying, if the defect is open and obvious.
No, I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because White doesn't deal with a common area. And the statute and the law provides that a landlord's exception is to deal with a common area or a duty that's hidden. And in the hidden standpoint, that's where obvious, open and obvious.
I'm sorry.
Are you arguing then it's per se liability if there is a failure to maintain, even if there's an open and obvious problem?
Well, I made that motion actually below. There's talk about strict liability. We never made a strict liability claim in this case, so a landlord has a duty. These duties are negligence. That's where it comes. But where a landlord violates a code, there's case law, and I think Grzegorz is one. I can't remember the other one off the top of my head. But a court can present that as a negligence per se claim as well. And that's where that comes from.
And I just want to clarify. So earlier you said, quote, there's no doubt she tripped on the raised concrete. And you seem to allude to a hidden, I forget the exact language, for a hidden dangerous condition from the White case. There's no claim that it was hidden, correct? Because you said she tripped on...
Actually, the screen on the window in the White case had a warning on it.
No, my question is, your claim is that she tripped on an uneven concrete, correct?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and that's what the...
There was a mat there, too, but, you know, that's what she went over. The reason she went down is because this concrete was raised.
So it's the concrete. It's concrete that's the issue, then.
Well, sure.
Okay.
But the mat is there in the sense of, is that hot masking it? You know, that's what the jury should be deciding, not a court as a matter of law.
Right, but...
That's a question of fact, Your Honor.
No, I know, but you seem to be contradicting yourself. You're saying that she tripped over the... Well, I just want to make sure I'm clear. Your claim is that she tripped over...
I'm walking this way, Your Honor, and here's the lip I'm tripping over, and we got a mat like that. Am I going to see that?
Okay.
Does that create an issue of fact? I'd say, yeah, it probably does.
Okay, but your claim is that she tripped over uneven concrete.
Yes.
Okay, and the district court found that it was the uneven concrete. It was clear that the uneven nature of the sidewalk was visible. There's no genuine issue as to material fact that the sidewalk was visible, and says again, there's no genuine issue as to material fact about whether the risk of the uneven sidewalk was apparent. So that's really the nub of the case then, right, is whether or not there's any material fact. And the district court said there is none.
I disagree with that completely, Your Honor, because there are material facts, but also the main issue is this is a case of negligent maintenance, not just a duty to warn, and this case is broader than that. And even in the recent Soderberg versus Anderson case from just 2 weeks ago, the court observed that they talked about the old Wagner versus Thomas Oberd entry with the roller skating rink, but they said, we made clear in that case that negligent maintenance and supervision of a skating rink are not inherent risks of the sport themselves, and thus there is no assumption of the risk for that condition. Landlord has a duty. They can say she should have seen it. Those are all issues for a jury.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Counsel, I have one quick follow-up. You said there are disputed issues of material fact. Can you, and I know you addressed this in your brief, but given what you've heard at oral argument here, can you clarify what exactly you think the disputed issues of material fact are?
Sure. Actually, I would refer the court to pages 11 and 12 of our briefs where we identify, let's see, 18 facts that which we consider would be issues of material fact, which would preclude summary judgment from how long these panels had been sunk there, the mat issues, the bringing the vendor in, knowing the concrete violated building codes, et cetera. I mean, so they're all listed there, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but respondents' argument about the facts doesn't change your view on that issue at this point?
No.
What you've heard here today, in other words. Okay. Well,
we'll
look closely at that then. Thank you.
But, you know, that's, I mean, these are all issues that the court never even looked at, according to its decision. So, thank you,
counsel. Thank you both, counsel. It was well argued and well briefed. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you.
Thank you.